Welcome to the Parrot Care Sessions, produced by Talking Naturally, exclusively for the World Parrot Trust. This is a series of in-depth conversations with leading experts, helping you to discover better ways to live with and care for your feathered friends. Hello, today on the Parrot Care Sessions, I'm joined by Dr. Scott Eccles, a board-certified avian veterinary specialist, adjunct professor at Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine, a past president for the Association for Avian Veterinarians, a frequent lecturer at multiple universities and conferences in the US and abroad, as well as being an author and filmmaker. His forays into filmmaking led him to establish Avian Studios, where he creates educational media that help teach people about the changes they can make to improve and enrich the lives of their companion parrots. Go to avianstudios.com for videos, blogs, and other information on bird care and interesting avian topics. Dr. Eccles, Scott, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Charlie. As always, I've really enjoyed doing these podcasts, so I'm looking forward to this next one.
Thank you, so am I. Scott, I think we should start by explaining what we are, and just as importantly, what we're not going to be looking at in the next 30 minutes. So while we will be looking at reproductive problems, and of course especially focusing on diseases of the reproductive tract, we'll not be discussing factors that might impact on reproductive success, like nest box size and shape, and which species of parrots live well together and which don't.
That sounds great. I think we should focus on pet parrot issues or pet bird issues as opposed to breeding aviculture type related problems.
And that's perhaps something we should also stress, Scott, that this edition of the Parrot Care Sessions is not aimed just at professional breeders. Anyone who owns a bird will, we hope anyway, find it of interest.
And this subject does apply to anyone who owns a bird, whether it's a chicken, a finch, a parrot, absolutely.
And just as a last thought, discussions about the reproductive tract and disease in general can be quite technical. Vets like yourself spend many years gathering some almost impossibly specialist knowledge. Perhaps we should assure listeners that we'll be doing our very best to explain things in English that we can all understand.
That sounds good.
First off then, Scott, just to put this discussion into context, in terms of your veterinary practice and the birds that you see, just how common are reproductive diseases and what percentage of the birds that you see are female compared with those that are male?
Well, in pet bird practice, bird, in my experience and in talking with several other veterinarians who work with birds, reproductive tract diseases are very common and primarily with female birds. In my experience, now I'm a specialist and I get a lot of referrals that are related to reproductive tract disease, but anywhere from 15 to 25% of the bird cases I see may have a reproductive component. And if you look at surgeries that I do, the most common reason I have to open up a bird's belly is because of female reproductive tract disease, by far. So it is a very common surgical issue that I have to deal with, and that's reproductive tract disease.
And I imagine performing surgery on a small bird is quite a specialist task.
It's something I enjoy doing. It's also something that myself and others have really studied and worked on. So yes, it is quite a specialized type of surgery.
I imagine too that the equipment you use is very specialized too, but perhaps outside the remit of this particular podcast.
Maybe another discussion.
Maybe another one, indeed. Scott, is it possible to say whether or not there's a single underlying factor to reproductive disease at all?
Well, no, because the reproductive tract system in birds is quite complex, especially in female birds, and there are many contributing factors. You know, those contributing factors can be behavioral. They can be related to diseases, even not connected directly with the reproductive tract disease. For example, obesity may contribute to reproductive problems. We can have liver disease, kidney disease, all sorts of other factors that can contribute to reproductive tract diseases. And then, of course, those birds that are highly productive that lay a large number of eggs, are going to be more prone to reproductive tract problems.
So we should say from the outset then that there's not really a single factor that an owner could change to prevent reproductive disease occurring.
That's correct. We will probably want to get into some things that they can do to help reduce the risk. Sure. But yes, there is not one single thing that will eliminate reproductive tract diseases.
Thank you. Scott, turning to specifics now. What are the common reproductive diseases that female birds get? And in general terms, how can they be treated or perhaps even better prevented in the first place?
Okay. The one problem that most people recognize with female birds is what they call egg binding. And egg binding can be any of a collection of problems where the egg gets stuck in the belly and is not properly ovopositioned or deposited out of the body. And that is what most people think of when they hear about reproductive tract diseases. Of course, they're far more complex than that because we have what would be the equivalent of a uterine infection, and they have what's called the oviduct or the salpinks. Those are both the same things, oviduct and salpinks. Right. So they can have an infection there. Cancer we see with some regularity in pet birds. So you can have cancer of the oviduct. You can have cystic disease of the oviduct. We can sometimes have an extra oviduct where they have birds normally only have a left-sided reproductive tract, mm-hmm. and sometimes we'll have a right one develop, either resulting or contributing to problems or resulting from problems. In other words, there's some stimulus such as the ovary is not working properly or somehow, and it stimulates the right oviduct to reform, and it's usually abnormal. And then we can have the egg get literally stuck within it, meaning it is adhered to the inner lining of the oviduct. You can have inflammation in the belly, what they call egg yolk peritonitis, and that's where you can imagine an egg splattering in the belly, and all those proteins and components cause inflammation. And then we have the ovary itself, and the ovary can become cancerous. It can have cysts on it. It can have infections and other problems. And all these things contribute to the collection of diseases we call reproductive tract diseases. So there can be one or combination of problems contributing to that. And that's why I said this is not a simple, straightforward problem. And when I go in surgically and I'm evaluating that reproductive tract, I'm oftentimes looking at multiple different issues and addressing multiple problems within that.
Presumably, a wide range of diseases like that call for a wide range of treatments.
Some of them are treated just medically. In other words, they've got a little egg yolk peritonitis. They've got a little bit of egg yolk that's splattered in their belly. It's caused some inflammation. The birds are not feeling great. But sometimes we just support them through that with maybe fluids, sometimes antibiotics, sometimes anti-inflammatories. And a lot of those are self-resolving, which is good. And then you have the more involved ones where they have sometimes they have an egg stuck. Sometimes we can assist the delivery of the egg, if you will. Mm-hmm. So we can assist that and help them get that out externally. There are some other medications we can use that basically help destimulate the hormonal activity of the ovary. And these are drugs such as Deslorelin and Lupron and others. The problem with the use of these drugs is they're often used after the problem has developed, right, in an attempt to stop egg laying. And these products are designed to use to prevent the beginning of egg laying, not once egg laying has started. So a lot of times I use these medications in effort to try to calm down the reproductive tract system in preparation for surgery or after surgery to make sure that they're not going to be immediately stimulated to go back into production. Okay. And then, of course, that leads us to surgery. In surgery, unfortunately, is sometimes the only means to correct some of these problems. And again, as a referral specialist, I do see a higher percentage of cases that require surgery. So I'm not saying that the average bird with reproductive tract problems needs surgery. That's fewer and less often than the ones that can do well with just medical supportive therapy.
Scott, the drugs you mentioned earlier, like Lupron, these are not over-the-counter drugs. They're prescription only.
Yes, these are going to be provided by your veterinarian.
Right. And just how easy is it to recognize that a bird is egg-bound?
Well, sometimes it's very obvious. The bird is not feeling well. They're down on the bottom of the cage. They're breathing hard. Their belly is distended. Sometimes you see them straining. Sometimes you even see them pass partial eggs, egg yolks, egg shells, and things like that. And you can tell something's not quite right. You may even see or have seen a number of eggs that have come out looking abnormally. They're misshapen, they're large, they're crinkled, they're discolored. There may be some signs leading up to that. And then you have some birds that you don't know until they get into advanced stages. And those are a little more difficult to diagnose early on. But usually it's those subtle behavior changes that tell an owner something is different. You know, it doesn't mean that there's a problem. It just, you know, should alert the owner that there's a change going on. And when a bird goes through egg-laying behavior, they do normally have some behavior changes.
Right. Scott, one of the questions I see asked on forums about this problem is whether it can be treated using home remedies.
Well, okay, I'm going to address that from a treatment now and a prevention aspect. Okay. So the treatment now, your bird is depressed, it's on the bottom of the cage, it's pressing, it's pushing, it appears to be trying to get an egg out and it's having difficulty. I'm going to say this with everything that, you know, a sick bird, contact your veterinarian. But if you don't have time, you're not in a position to do so, maybe it's middle of the night, there are a couple easy things to do. One is make sure you provide a well-humidified area for your bird. That could mean putting the bird into a fish tank or a small cage and putting warm, wet towels in there to increase the humidity along with a bowl of water so the bird can get some water to drink. It also increases the humidity. The other thing is to keep a nice, warm surrounding. You don't want to cook the bird, especially if they're breathing hard. They may actually be overheated already. Mm-hmm. So you want to be aware of that. But those things, you know, try to get the bird in a nice, warm, comfortable area. If it's in a high traffic area, maybe in the center of the house, or you might want to put this bird into a kind of a darker, quieter area of the house so it can relax more and hopefully pass this egg. And again, provide humidity and a little bit of warmth unless the bird appears to be hot.
From everything you're saying, this is a very stressful time for a bird.
Oh, sure. Egg laying is, you know, even though it may be brief, normal egg laying, you know, does increase stress in the bird, and it's a physically demanding procedure for the bird to pass this egg that comes out of them.
Sure. Scott, you mentioned earlier that you would talk about prevention.
Okay. When birds become reproductively active, female birds, they tend to start storing food in terms of fat in the liver and also within the body in preparation to use that energy to make the egg, which is normal. The problem is that if we provide a diet that is poor quality, they're going to start eating more and more of that, and they're going to gain an abnormal amount of fat. They also may develop micronutrients like vitamin and mineral deficiencies, and maybe even protein and other deficiencies. And first thing, try to work to get your bird on a good plane of nutrition. One of the things I commonly find we're doing is correcting the diet while these birds have reproductive problems. I consider this conditioning the bird, because if we're going to consider any type of procedure, whether it's medical or surgical, I want this bird to be in as good a shape as possible.
Right.
And sometimes that will mean I may have to put off the surgery for a couple months as long as the bird is stable so that I can get it into better shape in preparation for surgery.
Which is exactly the same with humans, of course. If you are overweight or very unhealthy, your surgeon may delay or reschedule your operation.
Exactly. That's absolutely, and it's really the same principle. And I guess we should go into the discussion about sex and the single bird. And this term is actually coined by my mentor and good friend, Dr. Brian Speer. And this idea, sex and the single bird, is that when you consider pet birds, they have normal cycles just like any other animal. And because we do not typically spay or neuter our pet birds, they're going to have normal reproductive cycles. And single bird doesn't necessarily mean you have one bird in the house. It means that that bird is not paired up with another like species bird. So birds, as would be expected of almost any animal, are going to want to develop sexually, and they will want to develop pair bonds. And it's a very strong drive for a lot of birds. It doesn't happen with all of them, but it's a very strong drive. And that pair bond can be with a toy. That pair bond can be with a person, which is fairly common. And, of course, sometimes with another bird, which may be okay. And the issue that we get into with people is that a lot of people pet and stroke their birds, and this is human nature. We want to touch and interact with animals. In fact, it's part of that therapeutic aspect of having an animal.
Of course, yeah.
And I don't want to say this is the dangerous type of interaction, but it's the type of interaction that may lead to a problem, and that is stroking a bird, cuddling it, petting along its back, and so forth. To a bird, that is a signal for mating, pair bonding, and so forth. Now, I'm suggesting you change that type of activity. First of all, if you're going to pet the bird, just pet the bird or scratch the bird along the back of the head, not the rest of the body. Second thing, interact with the bird in a different manner. Birds need to be doing other activities other than just eating, sitting around the cage, and thinking about sex. So if we give that bird some other opportunities to, say, play, forage for food, work for food, and so forth, we're giving that bird other opportunities to spend its time in a productive manner.
So, Scott, how does this inadvertent overstimulation then lead to reproductive tract disease?
Ah, okay, that's the question right there. So how does we go from point A to B?
Yeah.
Well, in general, a lot of our pet birds were bred in captivity. A lot of these were bred and selected for good breeding traits. In other words, they bred readily in captivity, and we selected those birds, and we kept doing this over time to the point that we now have chickens that lay almost year-round, ducks that can almost lay year-round as well, and even cockatiels that can lay numerous clutches of eggs throughout the year. In the wild, the stimulus for breeding is variable, but in general includes the availability of food, certain climatic conditions such as weather, availability of rain, temperature, and so forth, the availability of mate, and security from danger. So in captivity, we have taken away most of those concerns. First of all, there's food and water available all the time. It's a consistent factor. Danger is pretty limited because we typically have birds in a protected environment. And the presence of the mate then is, again, it's a favorite toy, it's a human or something else. And those are oftentimes constant. So here's where we go from point A to B. Its normal response is to go into that reproductive activity. And then we further stimulate it by petting and stroking and encouraging that bird-human bond. And that is where we get into continual egg laying or repeated egg laying. And you can imagine a woman having a child every 9 months.
Very, very hard on the body.
Very hard on the body and so forth. And that's more or less what we're running into is we're wearing down the bird's body.
Right, so it's not so much the egg laying per se, it's what the body goes through as it prepares to lay.
That's correct. And without getting into a lot of details, there are numerous physiologic changes that occur in preparation for egg laying. And those changes are intended to be short term for that bird to lay a clutch. So the problem is long term, they can contribute to a number of medical issues.
Right. I imagine this is something that many owners don't fully understand. As another question I frequently see is an owner saying that their parrot constantly lays eggs and asking, is this normal? From what we're saying then, Scott, that doesn't perhaps seem to be the right question, and maybe they should ask if constant egg laying is doing any harm.
Well, it's not normal in terms of what a wild bird would do, but in a pet situation or household situation, it can be normal. But physiologically, it's very demanding. And just to kind of give you an idea, a chicken, we don't know the numbers for a lot of other animals, but a chicken can take a follicle off the ovary, goes down the tube, that oviduct or the uterus, gets the albumen and all the other egg white and everything else added to it, the membranes and the shell. That can happen in a process in as little as 23 hours. And
that's
even
amazing,
yes. And even more dynamic is the ability to lay the shell in under 20 minutes. So in other words, the shell is put on the outside of that yolk and the egg white and so forth in as little as 15 to 20 minutes. So very dynamic process. Incredible resources, body resources are required to make this happen. So you can see physiologically, it's a demanding process.
Presumably, Scott, this resource use can lead to problems that, while not specifically confined to the reproductive system, are important for owners to consider. What might they be?
Okay. Well, for example, I mentioned that the eggshell can be laid in a matter of 15 to 20 minutes in some species. Well, the way that happens is the bird draws the calcium out of the bones, puts it into the bone marrow, and ultimately the bloodstream so that it is ready to have this massive calcium dump to make that egg. Well, over a short period of time, that's not a problem. Long term, it can actually weaken the bones. And we see a number of birds that have had chronic reproductive activity actually develop fractures. They can be in the wings, legs, multiple different locations. So that's one right there. Another one is we sometimes see what are called abdominal hernias. And this is where the muscle wall starts to separate along the belly. And actually the insides start to come out and they literally come just beneath the skin, under the skin. And those can be a real problem, especially if we get intestine entrapped in that, because the intestine can become strangulated and that can be life-threatening. A lot of them are not life-threatening, but they cause problems because oftentimes surgically they make it more difficult to get into the belly. If you can imagine this kind of fat inflammatory mess and then trying to repair that muscle wall. And then sometimes the liver becomes infiltrated with fat, again, as part of a normal physiologic response to make that egg. But over a long period of time, it can contribute to fatty liver disease. And we may have issues with that. And of course, obesity. A lot of these birds, when they get into that chronic reproductive cycle, start storing more and more fat. And of course, if we have low quality food, that contributes to the problem.
Scott, we earlier touched briefly on the occasions that a parrot might lay a misshapen or even shell-less egg. Can we expand a little on that, please?
Sure. So let's say your bird is laying these abnormal appearing eggs. They don't have a shell, a partial shell, or they're funny shaped. Oftentimes that indicates that something wrong has happened in that process, from the follicle being released from the ovary as it goes down that tube, that oviduct. Well, there's probably something that's happened along that oviduct that has made that egg abnormal. For example, there can be an infection in the oviduct. Mm-hmm. There could be cancer. There could be strictures or adhesions, and it's kind of caused the egg to tug and pull and deform. And it can also be in the very end part of the reproductive tract where the shell is laid. There could be some abnormalities there. So it doesn't tell me specifically what's going on. It tells me something's not quite right in that reproductive tract. But here's the thing. Some birds will have an occasional egg that's abnormal. An occasional egg that's abnormal, especially if they're not having problems with it, I don't worry about. Repeated eggs that are abnormal, those are the ones I get concerned about, because that tells me there's a consistent process that's not working properly.
So if an owner sees their bird lay the occasional misshapen egg, that's not necessarily a problem.
Yes, with the understanding that the bird didn't have significant issues with it. It was a normal laying process, or maybe slightly took a little bit longer, maybe because the egg was a little bit larger than normal. But, you know, occasional abnormal egg can be acceptable.
Thanks, Scott. That's a fascinating summary. Thank you. This does all lead on to another question about reproduction that I frequently see being asked.
Yes.
Can female birds lay eggs without a male present? I'm sure there's a fairly short answer to this one.
Yes. So, absolutely. The presence of a male is to help stimulate the female to lay eggs, but they certainly don't have to, and of course to fertilize the eggs. And you definitely do not have to have a male in order for a female bird to lay an egg.
Okay, Scott, talking about male birds, we've talked extensively about disease in female birds, and you did say at the start of our conversation that diseases in females are far more common than in males. But could we turn now to look at what are the reproductive diseases that can affect male birds?
Okay. Well, the most common reproductive disease that we see in males are involving the testicle, as would be expected, and occasionally the phallus. So I'll break these down in just a moment. But the testicle, the most common ones I see are cystic testicular disease and cancer. And then we have diseases of the phallus. There are a few bird species, such as ducks and geese and a few other that are not commonly kept as pets, that have disorders of the phallus. The phallus is, it's not exactly the equivalent, but it's most similar to a penis. Okay, so it's a little bit different than, you know, a true penis, but they'll sometimes get infections. Mm-hmm. They'll sometimes actually prolapse, so they're more or less sticking out, and they get dried and infected and so forth. And those are more common with duck and other waterfowl type species.
The phallus in these birds is normally held inside the body.
That's correct, yes.
Scott, you mentioned cancer there. Are the incidences of cancer on the rise, would you know, or are vets better able to diagnose it now?
I would say that we are better able to diagnose cancer, and sometimes even in earlier phase. And it's not, I would say that it's not very common, but I do occasionally, maybe in 10 to 25% of the cases of female reproductive tract disease, we find some degree of cancer. So in other words, it may be localized in a portion of the reproductive tract. We remove it. We send it off for a pathologist to look at. And they said, you know, by the way, there was one section that had cancer cells in it. And sometimes we're dealing with primary cancer, where that is the reason that we're in there in surgically, or that's the reason the bird's having problems. And my goal is to try to remove all or most of it. Sometimes it's not possible to remove everything. And sometimes, unfortunately, the cancer is disseminated throughout the belly, and those are very difficult to manage.
That's a surprisingly high incident rate, Scott. Is it as high in wild birds, would you know, or is it something to do with inbreeding or changes in diet, perhaps?
I think it actually, we could say all of the above. Now, again, I'm a specialist, and I get referral cases, and I see a lot of surgery. So I'm going to have a skewed number in terms of percentages, but I can give you some other numbers here. The poultry industry, and we have birds that are laying constantly. And by 2 to 3 years of age, they are at the equivalent of menopause in terms of the number of ova or follicles they've released. So they have a very, very high incidence of reproductive tract cancer. And it may not be fatal. It may just be, again, localized. But they have a very, very high incidence, and maybe up to 30 to 40% of the birds by the time they reach 3 years of age can have reproductive tract cancer. In pet birds, it's less common. Maybe up to 20-25% of those birds have some degree of cancer.
But as in a human, if the cancer is very localized, it may not impact on the bird's life to too great a degree.
If it's localized, contained, and does not spread, yes.
Right. Scott, you've referred a couple of times to being a specialist. It does show. It's fascinating talking with you. How would an owner go about finding a specialist like you?
The best way is to go to the Association of Avian Veterinarians website, and that's aavasinvictor.org. And they can search and find a veterinarian that is an AAV member worldwide. There is also a special organization in Europe, European College of Zoological Medicine, and you can go to their website. And there's also another specialty organization within the United States called the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners, and they also have an avian board certification. And you can search for veterinarians through those means as well.
Has what an expert vet like yourself can do changed very much over the years?
Absolutely. The knowledge base has been growing rapidly. And, you know, bird medicine really its infancy was in the 1970s. And it really, we didn't have organized bird medicine organizations until the 1980s. So we're looking at a relatively young discipline. And at the same time, we're looking at one that has every bit of information increases that knowledge base. And every year we get more and more studies and so forth. So absolutely, I think the avian medical database has grown significantly.
Do you find that you're still learning all the time, Scott?
Every day.
This must make your work very interesting.
Absolutely.
Finally, Scott, I don't suppose that any of us like to think about this when a bird is ill, but I'm sure something that most parrot owners faced with these diseases will need to know. Are they expensive to cure?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay, surgery can be expensive, and it depends on what we're having to do surgically. So certainly that can be an expensive cost to manage. Some of the medical things, no, not necessarily. And again, I really try to focus on prevention. So when we teach the owners, I see the owners are starting to pet and cuddle and stroke and love on their birds. You know, I talk with them right then and there and say, you know, let's try to stop this. The other thing is, of course, getting their diet in line. These are things that we can do to help prevent the risk of these problems, and also getting the bird doing productive activities, going outside, interacting with the owners by playing and tricks, and also foraging and other types of really productive activities. And, you know, medically, a lot of these diseases we can medically manage. We don't have to go in surgically with most of them.
Thank you very much for a fascinating conversation. Scott, Dr. Scott Eccles, thank you very much indeed for taking time out of your schedule to talk with us today.
Charlie, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the opportunity to discuss this topic, and I hope that we get the opportunity to do more of these in the future. Thank you.
For more information on caring for your parrot, check out Dr. Eccles' instructional DVDs in the Expert Companion Bird Care series. They're online at www.avianstudios.com. For more information about parrots and current conservation efforts, visit the World Parrot Trust on the web at www.parrots.org. And finally, for more information about talking naturally, please visit my site at www.talking-naturally.co.uk.